This is the Everything Financial Radio program. I am your host, Dennis Tubergen. Glad you decided to tune in today. I've got two special guest experts joining me today. Mr. Peter Schiff, author of The Real Crash, will be joining me, as will Mr. Mitch Shedlock, who is a very prolific economic commentator. We'll talk to both of them about what's going on out there in the financial markets and how it might affect your 401k and IRA. We'll be talking also about the U.S. dollar. Will it continue to get stronger or will it get weaker? Will we see runaway inflation? Our guests have some very interesting views. Before I get to those interviews, let me remind you that if you've not yet attended a new retirement rules class, we have restructured the class for the new year. We would encourage you to attend if you've not attended a new retirement rules class. You can get more information at the website, newretirementrules.com. The cost for the class is just $49, and our class is coming up on January the 30th, which is a Saturday. The class begins at 9 a.m. and concludes at 2:30 p.m., and we talk about all the factors out there that affect your retirement planning, and a lot of these are not talked about and aren't heard that often. So we look at things from an historical perspective. We believe that history does repeat itself and that human behavior is predictable, and we conduct an entire class from 9 o'clock to 2:30 about when have we been here before, what happened, and if we look at what happened then, we can project, we believe, what will happen moving ahead. So we've got great feedback on the course. The cost is just $49 for you and a guest. That includes all the handouts, the book, lunch for you and a guest. You can get more information by visiting the website, newretirementrules.com. The website again, newretirementrules.com. I am pleased to have on the Everything Financial Radio program as a returning guest expert, Mr. Mitch Shedlock. Mitch is a prolific writer and economic commentator, political commentator. He is also an investment advisor representative. And Mitch, welcome back to the program.
Hey, it's a pleasure to be back on. Lots going on in the markets the last couple of days here.
Yeah, let's talk about the European Central Bank and negative interest rates for our listeners maybe that aren't familiar with what happened. Explain.
Just this morning, the ECB, that's the European Central Bank, that is the Fed's counterpart for the Eurozone, announced it would continue its 60 billion euros a month bond buying program. That's QE for ECB. They reduced the interest rate to a record low of minus 0.3%. They pledged to buy more assets with existing bond purchases, and they announced that in addition to buying standard government debt, they would buy municipal bonds. Well, that looks like a pretty, I called it a Japanesque announcement in my blog just a few moments ago. But that was not enough to excite the markets. The German stock market fell 3%. The index of the 300 largest European stocks fell 3%. French stock market fell 3.2%. In the UK, the FTSE, that's the equivalent pretty much of the S&P 500 here in the United States, dropped about 2%. The U.S. S&P right now is down about 1.1%, and the Dow down about 1%. The U.S. dollar soared the U.S. dollar index plunged in response to this. Everyone, Dennis, was expecting more. You know, what do they want? Do they want Europe to buy every government bond and every municipal bond of any country in Europe? Actually, that's what's happening in Japan right now.
So, Mish, just the idea of negative interest rates, who in their right mind would put money in a bank?
Well, so far they've gotten away with it, and so far that's like the intrabank rate here that they lowered. Deposit rates, I think, in one country, I'm trying to remember which one, last week, actually went negative for the first time. So people are still getting 0% on deposits. But the fear here is, and Bernanke has talked about this in the United States, that if we have negative interest rates, people will pull their money out and simply sit on it. And actually, that would cause a run in the bank because there's more on deposit than there is on hand. Banks have lent out more money than they have on deposits. So it could get really messy in the United States, particularly because the U.S. has a lot of money market funds. And unlike traditional banks, all these money market funds do is pretty much invest in government bonds of a certain duration. So if they were hit with negative interest rates here, like has happened in Europe, we would have an immediate collapse of all of the money market funds. So I don't think we're going to see them here in the U.S. And of course, the Fed right now is pretty much hell-bent on hiking rates in December, actually in a couple of weeks. I think those rate hikes are going to come far slower and be much less than what everyone thinks.
So, Mish, how long can negative interest rates continue? I mean, this is really, it seems to me, and you give me your take, but it's an act of desperation.
It is absolutely an act of desperation, and it's all on the ridiculous notion that deflation is causing problems. Well, what caused problems, especially in the housing crash in 2007, was speculative bubbles. And when we have these negative interest rates, it supports stock markets. Or really low interest rates like we have here in the U.S., the S&P has been on a surge. Bond markets have been on a tear. The financial assets, housing has recovered, and in some places, especially California, is back in bubble land. And it's actually the bursting of financial bubbles that's actually very, very destabilizing. Not the fact that someone's paying 1% less for a coat than they did a year ago. So all of these things have been counterproductive, actually. And by driving down interest on savers, the people who are hurt most are those on fixed income, those that spend every penny. And now here we are talking about negative interest rates. The idea is to get them to spend more money while robbing them of money that they've saved so that it makes less every month. And something that these guys, central bankers, ought to realize is that someone has to hold every dollar every time. It's not like it can go out there and force people, to spend their last dime, because if I go out and buy a coat, then the store has that dollar. So what does it do with it? So these dollars that the ECB and the Fed have printed, someone has to hold every one of those dollars at every point in time. So this notion that they can get everyone to spend this money, they've not figured out that someone still has to hold those dollars. So and they're destroying the people last on the totem pole. It's for the benefit of those with the of the wealthy, of banks, and we've bailed out the banks already, and here we are because of these low interest rates. Subprime auto sales have surged. Student debt out there is incredible, and we, despite that crisis, we've not fixed any of the underlying problems.
Well, Mish, when you use the term bubble to describe real estate, give me your take on if we're repeating the same mistakes in real estate that we saw prior to the subprime crisis. It seems that government-backed mortgages now are available with very low credit scores for somewhere between 3% and 10% down. We've seen this newly created money flow to the stock market, margin debts at all-time high. Are we seeing a bubble now in real estate and in stocks, in your view?
Yeah, we're seeing a bubble in pretty much in financial assets across the board. Subprime lending for autos is up. I think the FHA came out with 2.5% down. You know, and it's all in reverse. The time when you would want to be extending this credit would be, you know, after a price crash, not now. And despite these huge rises in the stock market over the past, you know, since 2009, and more than doubling of the stock market, pension plans are still seriously underfunded. In Illinois, we have pension plans that are on average about 40% funded. Well, they're all plowing into stocks. Why? Because bonds are yielding less than 1%. So right now, after we've had this biggest rise, the Fed's, by suppressing yields, is forcing pension plans to meet their ridiculous 8% targets, which I don't believe is possible, when bonds are yielding under 1%. So we're seeing more risk-taking by pension plans as a result of this. We're seeing speculative housing investments back again. We're seeing subprime lending in housing by the FHA. We're seeing subprime auto loans. And it's subprime auto loans that's actually been driving the auto market here. And autos have been one of the bright spots of this recovery. Meanwhile, what do we have? We have GDP that's barely humming along at 2%. This is the weakest recovery in history, and here we are. Yellen's prepared to hike rates. Actually, I think they should have hiked rates long ago. I don't think rates should have gotten as low as they did, but here we are. I don't believe the market's prepared for these. We're going to find out.
Well, we're chatting today with Mr. Mish Shedlock, and Mish, we're going to have to leave it there for this segment. But before we go to break, let the listeners know how to get in touch with you and read what it is that you write every day.
I have a blog. It's called globaleconomicanalysis.blogspot.com. It's going to change. I'm actually moving to WordPress. But the easy way to find me is just do a Google search for Mish, M-I-S-H. It should take you straight to my blog. I'm pretty easy to find. I write three or four times a day, actually, on commenting on the news. And the news of today was the interest rate cut out of the ECB, which we just talked about, and that's going to have a spillover effect here in the U.S.
Well, I read it frequently, enjoy it, and would encourage the listeners to do the same. We'll continue our conversation with Mr. Mish Shedlock when Everything Financial Radio returns. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Everything Financial Radio program. I'm your host, Dennis Tubergen. I will be continuing my conversation with Mr. Mish Shedlock in the next segment. Before I get to my conversation, or the first part of my conversation with Mr. Peter Schiff, let me remind you, if you're just joining us, that we do have a new retirement rules class coming up on January the 30th, which is a Saturday. The class will be held at the East Beltline campus of Western Michigan University. It begins at 9 a.m. and concludes at 2:30 p.m. And you should attend if you are over the age of 55 and concerned about how to plan for your retirement, given today's very different economy. And even if the economy doesn't seem different today, we're going to point out to you some storm clouds that are on the horizon and give you some ideas and strategies when you leave the class that you might consider implementing. More information on the class is available at newretirementrules.com. You can register there as well. I'm pleased to have as a returning guest on the Everything Financial Radio program a name you'll recognize, Mr. Peter Schiff. Peter is the author of The Real Crash, and he is a frequent commentator on television and radio. Peter, welcome back to the program.
Oh, well, thanks for having me back.
Peter, you know, there was some news made recently when the International Monetary Fund announced that in October of 2016, the Chinese renminbi would now be part of their accepted basket of reserve currencies. Is this another sign that the dollar is on the way out?
Yeah, it's another step in that direction, a piece of the puzzle that's been building over time. But I think what's really going to, you know, push the dollar out is going to be the next dollar bear market. I think we have a bubble in the U.S. dollar right now. I think it's extremely overvalued based on the misconceptions around the world, you know, among investors, currency speculators. They believe that all the things that the Federal Reserve has done, its quantitative easing and the 0% interest rate program, they believe it was a success and that now we have a viable recovery and that as a result the Fed could dial back all those stimulus programs and everything is great and the economy is in great shape. This is all a lie. This is a bigger bubble than the dot-com bubble or the real estate bubble. It is going to end in a more spectacular way. The Fed's policies have not been a success. They've been an abject failure. The economy is in much worse shape now than it was on the eve of the 08 financial crisis, another crisis that the Fed created but was oblivious to until after the fact. And so I think that when the U.S. slips back into recession by next year, it'll be obvious that the Fed's policies failed. They're going to have to go back to the drawing board with another round of QE. They're going to have to bring interest rates back down to zero, assuming they ever raised them in the first place. And then the bottom is going to drop out of the dollar. And then I think you're going to see the end of the dollar's reserve currency status as other currencies like the yuan and some others rise to supplant the dollar.
So, Peter, if you think about this bubble in the dollar, and I'm just thinking of the U.S. dollar index that's hovering around 100 as we record this, how do you explain this? Is this just like the best house in a bad neighborhood? People don't know what else to do with their reserves?
Yeah, I mean, in a way, the dollar benefits from the fact that everybody else has problems, too. And so people are worried about Europe or they're worried about China or Japan, and so they take refuge in the dollar. But they don't bother to notice that the dollar, the United States, has more problems than the countries they're actually worried about. But people don't worry about the U.S. because we benefit from all the other problems. So it creates the appearance that our economy is okay because Americans keep taking the money that everybody else lends them and they spend it. And that keeps the GDP numbers up for now. But meanwhile, the real economy is disintegrating. Our manufacturing sector is collapsing. Our debts are mounting. And eventually this thing is going to implode. And then people are going to figure out that instead of running towards the dollar, they should be fleeing the dollar.
So, Peter, where do you see the next reserve currency? Where do you see the next safe haven coming from? I mean, you look at Japan.
Well, I think we're going to go back to gold as being the reserve. I don't think we're just going to have another reserve currency like the dollar. Remember, before the dollar came on the scene, gold was the reserve. We were on a gold standard. And the dollar was redeemable in gold and backed by gold, and that's the reason that the world moved away from owning gold directly to owning gold indirectly through owning the dollar. But ever since 1971, when we, you know, defaulted on our commitments and went off the gold standard, we really haven't had a monetary system anchored by anything. And I think when this falls apart, this experiment falls apart, it's not like the world's just going to grab onto the euro or the, you know, RMB or the yen or some other, you know, fiat currency, even though it may be, you know, less flawed than the dollar. It's still not the same thing as gold. But I think what's going to be key is the gold backings of these various currencies, which is one of the reasons I think the Chinese have been stockpiling gold and continue to buy gold, but be less than candid about how much they actually have. And I think China knows this, and if they want to elevate the status of the yuan, I think they want to have a lot of gold backing behind it. And in fact, it may even be the first major currency that becomes convertible into gold.
So, Peter, what happens if China does go back and tie their currency to gold on a gold exchange standard? What happens to the average standard of living, say, of our listener out there that's an American?
Well, I think American standard of livings are already dropping. I mean, that's obvious. The cost of living is going up, and incomes are not. Incomes are falling. Real incomes are declining. And the cost of living is going up. I mean, there's a temporary reprieve right now because at least the cost of energy has come down. But I think this is going to reverse with the dollar. And the average American is going to see a plunge in their standard of living, particularly if the Chinese remonetize gold and you see a big strengthening in the yuan, because that will mean that the Chinese consumers are going to be buying all sorts of stuff that currently Americans are able to buy. But, you know, there is a limit to the global production, and if the Chinese start buying things, that means there's going to be less things available for Americans to buy. You know, right now, a lot of the products that are made in China get shipped to America, and Americans get to enjoy them, even though the Chinese, you know, produce them. They put in the effort, but we reap the rewards. But when their currency goes up, more and more of China's production is going to be consumed domestically by the Chinese, which means there's not going to be as much surplus for the Americans. And so the supply of goods for sale is going to go way down in America, which means the price of those goods is going to go way up.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there for this segment. Our guest today is Mr. Peter Schiff, author of The Real Crash. We'll continue our conversation with Mr. Schiff when Everything Financial Radio continues. Stay with us.
Give me your money.
This is the Everything Financial Radio program. I'm your host, Dennis Tubergen, and I'm chatting today with Mr. Mish Shedlock. You can read his blog. The easiest way to find him is do a Google search for Mish, M-I-S-H. I would encourage you to do that. And Mish, once again, welcome to the program today.
Hey, a pleasure to be back on. I enjoy these segments.
Let's talk about something that we finished up talking about in the last segment, and that is that a lot of these pensions are using actuarial assumptions of 8%, and yet bonds have anemic yields. At what point has the Fed inadvertently created a massive pension underfunding problem that will affect a lot of Americans?
It's not visible yet. Well, actually, the pension underfunding is visible. I commented in the last segment that Illinois is on average 40% funded, and that is despite these enormous rallies we've had in the stock market since March of 2009. So Illinois has not been making their pension contributions as expected, and but one would have thought that this huge rally in the stock market would have erased some of that, but it didn't. And so here we are. I think the Fed is without a doubt blown a bubble, and one wonders whether or not that was their purpose. In fact, Bernanke even bragged about it at one point. That's former Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke bragged about it at one point, saying that was a direct result of QE. He almost made it sound as if that was the goal of QE. Well, financial bubbles, when they pop, are very, very destabilizing. We found out that in 2007. I don't think it'll play out the same way this time. In 2007, corporations had were unable to get funding, and many of them were priced as if they were going to go bankrupt. One of the things Bernanke did when he slashed interest rates as low as he did was revive the corporate bond market, and companies were again able to raise money. As long as they're able to raise money, I don't think we're going to see a crash to the same tune that we saw last time. But it might be a slow bleed. If one compares the U.S., say, to Japan, you know, there were a number of 50 and 100% rallies over the course of the last two decades, but the final result in like 2009, the Nikkei fell from 50,000 all the way to 7,000, was a complete washout over time. And I'm wondering if that's what's in store here for the U.S. stock markets. So not necessarily another crash like we've seen, but a slow bleed. And that slow bleed, you know, even if it's just a few percent a year and nothing to the extent that we saw in Japan, well, when pension plans are assuming they're going to make 8% a year and instead they're losing, say, you know, 2% a year for the next 5 or 7 years, you know, that's pretty bad business, Dennis.
Yeah, well, Mish, let's shift gears just a little bit and talk about the state of the economy. You mentioned in the last segment that this has been the slowest or weakest recovery in history. What's the outlook, in your view, for the U.S. economy?
I forecast a recession, and I thought it was going to hit late this year. It appears like I'm probably going to be wrong on that one. Earlier this year, I forecast Canada to go in recession, and it did. So I did get that one right. And here we now, the latest forecast from the Atlanta Fed model is for fourth quarter GDP to dip to 1.4%. I think anything under 2% is at stall speed. And we've been right at stall speed ever since 2009, pretty much. there would be a good quarter, everyone would get excited. We would have 3 or 3.5% growth, and then the next month or the next quarter, you know, it would fall back to a half of a percent. And at one point this year, we had a negative quarter pinned in. Through revisions, that negative quarter didn't happen, but we were flirting with recession in January of this year, and I think we're flirting again with it here now. So when the Fed's hiking into you know right into this, it's not going to, you know, it's certainly not going to do either the market's any good, nor is it going to do corporations any good. And corporate earnings have been plunging like a rock, and that's despite falling oil prices, which have reduced input costs for manufacturers. Manufacturing is in an outright contraction, and home sales have been weak. Consumer spending has been weak. The one real bright spot has been autos. But a lot of that is subprime, and I keep wondering how long that can last.
And Mitch, just explain to the listeners, when you say a lot of the auto sales have been to subprime borrowers, can you explain what that means?
Well, it's a FICO credit score that determines what your credit score is, and everyone has a number, and the interest rate you pay on your credit card is based off of what they call that FICO score. And it's a measure of risk. When your score is below a certain number, I think it's 650, 620 maybe, that you're no longer considered a good risk. Well, more and more loans every month have been going to people with credit scores that suggest they really don't merit this credit. We saw the same thing in the housing bubble as more and more credit was extended to weaker and weaker borrowers, anything to keep the housing bubble going. By the time credit was extended to that very last set of people, 2006 home prices had already topped. So here we are making housing loans to people whose home prices were about ready to crash. They walked away from those markets, and we were at risk of that happening again, actually, in housing. The FHA is making some pretty risky loans here, and, of course, taxpayers are at risk of that again. And it's the same way it goes every cycle. Those last on the totem pole are the ones that are going to get hit the hardest when the downturn happens, and I think we're on the verge of that downturn.
So, Mitch, what's your forecast for the U.S. stock market indices moving ahead?
Well, I've been wrong on this one for 2 years. I never expected this bubble to get as big as it did for as long as it did. Typically, you don't reblow the last bubble. And if you look, we even though home prices have risen substantially, in some places surpassed their previous high, the amount of activity is actually at very depressed levels. The overall amount of lending, everything is down in housing. The number of home starts, everything is way below prior levels. But here in the stock market, when the Fed prints all this money, it has to go somewhere. And it didn't go where the Fed wanted it to go. The Fed wanted consumer businesses to expand. They wanted incomes to go up, and that we've had very weak income growth. Instead, we've seen a lot of companies actually borrowing money in the financial markets to repurchase their own stock shares. That can only go so far, and on a smooth PE basis, people talk about forward PEs. I like to look at smooth earnings, taking out the dips, taking out the peaks. And if we looked at these, it's called Case-Shiller PEs, or some people call it smooth PEs. We are at a level right now only seen in 2007, in 2000, and at a stock market crash in 1929. So when you hear people say that stocks are cheap based off of PEs, well, they're not cheap at all.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there. Our guest today has been Mr. Mitch Shedlock. If you're just joining us, you can read Mitch's blog. And the easiest way to find it is by going to Google and searching under Mitch, M-I-S-H. And, Mitch, thanks for joining us today. We'd love to have you back.
Hey, it's a pleasure. Hey, I'll do these once a month if you'd like.
I appreciate that, and we will likely take you up on that offer. Everything Financial Radio returns after these words. Welcome back to the Everything Financial Radio program. I'm your host, Dennis Tubergen. I have the pleasure of chatting today with returning guest, Mr. Peter Schiff. Peter is the author of The Real Crash. I would encourage you to check it out. And we're chatting with Peter about the economy, and more specifically the U.S. dollar and currencies. And Peter, let me jump in where we left it off in a prior segment. What do you make now of the European Central Bank's decision to continue to print for, what, another year and a half?
Well, I don't make much of it. I think what was most important was that they did not increase the size of the monthly bond purchases. Everybody was expecting that to happen, which is one of the reasons that we had a sharp reversal in the dollar the day that Draghi announced the fact that they would not be expanding QE. They did extend the program for 6 months. But the extension was qualified with the words, if it's needed, if it's necessary. So, of course, they always could expand the program if it's necessary. The question is, will it be necessary? And I believe it won't be, because the sole purpose of quantitative easing, as stated by the ECB, is to increase the level of inflation close to, but not quite at, to 2%. And I think they're going to succeed a lot quicker than people think. Not that it's going to benefit Europe to have higher inflation. It won't. But I think once they get to 2%, they got to turn the monetary spigots off, because they have to keep inflation below 2%. They can't let it get to 2.5%. And so I think they're going to end up doing less quantitative easing than people believe. And I think interest rates in the Eurozone in a couple of years are likely to be higher than they are in the U.S., because I think we might be back at zero, even if we raise interest rates. And I think we may be starting QE4, just as Europe is winding down their QE program.
So, Peter, explain to the listeners the premise of your book, The Real Crash.
Well, the premise of that book, I wrote my first book called Crash Proof, How to Profit from the Coming Economic Collapse, and it came out in early 07. And then we had the financial crisis the following year. And a lot of people believed that the financial crisis was the economic collapse that I was writing about in my book. And the real crash is to remind readers that it's not. Right? I forecast all the things that happened in 2008. And I forecast, I said, we're going to have the worst recession since the Great Depression, double-digit unemployment, trillion-dollar budget deficits, the bankruptcy of Fannie and Freddie Mac, a financial crisis. I wrote all that. But that wasn't the crash. What I said was going to cause the economic crash was the way the government was going to respond to that, that it was going to try to reflate the bubble, it was going to print a bunch of money, and it was going to be the result of those policies that the U.S. economy was going to collapse. And so far, we haven't had that. The government has done all the things I said they would do in response to the financial crisis that I predicted, but the only thing that hasn't happened yet is the final crash. It does surprise me that it is taking so long, that this process is so drawn out. I would have thought the real crash would have happened already, but it hasn't. But I don't want people to be complacent and think that we're out of the woods. We're not, right? The worst is yet to come.
So, Peter, What does this real crash look like? How will it affect our listeners?
Well, I think it looks like a sovereign debt crisis, a currency crisis, a dollar crisis, and I think it's going to decimate the standard of living of most Americans. It's going to wipe out their life savings if they're in dollars. It's going to look like runaway inflation. I mean, this is what's coming, and just because it hasn't happened yet doesn't mean it's not going to happen. And that's why I think it's so important that investors protect themselves now, before it's too late. mean, that's what we're doing with our clients at Euro Pacific Capital, helping them build portfolios of stocks in places like Switzerland and Singapore and New Zealand or Hong Kong, safe havens, real safe havens, good quality dividend paying stocks in currencies that are going to rise, helping clients buy precious metals, gold and silver, which I think will be remonetized and maintain their value. So, you know, your listeners should check out what we're doing at Euro Pacific Capital at europac.com, which is EUROPAC.com is my website, and shiftgold.com for precious metals investing.
So, Peter, let me ask you this, because I've had listeners on the guest experts on the program that have told the listeners that given the high level of private debt that exists, that deflation will be the overwhelming economic trend, and yet you stated that your forecast is for runaway inflation. How do you square that argument, or how would you respond to those that say deflation will likely be the predominant economic trend?
Well, I think if you want to, price everything in real money, right? When people think of deflation, they think of, collapsing prices. And prices will collapse in gold, right? So, you can think about, what are stock prices in gold? Is the Dow 10 ounces of gold, whatever it is? Well, maybe it goes down to 1 ounce. That's a huge deflation, right? A big collapse. I think all prices are going to come down in terms of gold. But most people don't own gold. They own paper money. They own dollars. And if you're expecting deflation in dollars, you're going to be disappointed dramatically, because the dollar can lose value faster than other assets or consumer goods, because intrinsically the dollar is worthless. And there's no limit to how many the government can create. And so I think the dollar will lose value relative to gold faster than just about anything else, certainly faster than, consumer goods that people actually need and want. And so I think that if you're holding dollars, you're going to see prices skyrocket, because the government is going to fight deflation with inflation. That's their only tool. They keep printing money. They keep printing money until the money collapses in value. That's what's going to happen. The people who are looking, let's say, at the 1930s and say, look, we had deflation. Sure, we had deflation because we were on a gold standard. Gold was money. And even though Roosevelt confiscated the gold, money, the dollar was still backed by gold. So even though people weren't using gold directly, they were using it indirectly. That's not what we're doing today. And of course, back in the 1930s, the government was tiny compared to what it is today, and America wasn't in debt. We had savings. We were an industrial powerhouse. Now we're a basket case. We're in debt up to our eyeballs, and the government is enormous.
So, Peter, our listeners are listening to you talk about, owning gold, and certainly I would agree with that. How do you square the bear market in gold we've seen over the last 4 years?
Well, it's the bull market in the dollar. It's, gold went up from under 300 to almost 1,900 in 13 years of just uninterrupted gains. And then we had a pullback for the last few years as people have been overconfident in the U.S. economy. They believe that what the Federal Reserve has done has worked from the standpoint of creating a healthy economy, a viable recovery that no longer needs their monetary supports. That's all a fantasy. I mean, this is not a recovery. This is the biggest bubble the Fed has ever blown. And this thing is about to burst. And I think when reality rears its ugly head, people are going to figure this out, and gold's going to take off, because the dollar is going to tank. People are going to realize that there is no exit strategy, that it's QE infinity, and it's going to be a whole different game.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there. Our guest today has been Mr. Peter Schiff, author of The Real Crash. Peter, thank you for joining us.
Oh, anytime.
We live in interesting times, for lack of a better term. There's a lot going on in the economy, a lot going on potentially in the financial markets that will affect the way you plan for retirement. And if you were born after May 2 of 1950, there was a new change signed into law just last month that deals with and will affect potentially the way you collect your Social Security benefits. Congress has phased out, and President Obama has signed into law certain certain Social Security collection options will now no longer be available to those born after May 2 of 1950. We're going to have Professor Lawrence Kotlikoff on the program as soon as we can get him to clear up all these changes and help you understand them. However, in the meantime, I would invite you to attend one of our Social Security maximization workshops that we'll be holding again after the first of the year. On January 19th, we'll be at the Highlands. On January 21, we'll be at Stonewater. On January 26th, we'll be at Boulder Creek. All three of these Social Security maximization events to discuss how to collect Social Security benefits most efficiently and to explain to you what the recent changes are and how it might affect you will be covered at these meetings. These meetings begin at 6 o'clock p.m. and conclude at 7:30 p.m. We also serve a complimentary dinner at the conclusion of the meeting. To get more information or to register for these events, all you have to do is visit socialsecuritydinner.com. The website, again, is socialsecuritydinner.com. There's information posted there. There's also a place to register if you'd like to register for the event. Again, the events are free. We expect that they will fill up very quickly. We will be on January 19th at the Highlands, on January 21 at Stonewater, and January 26th will be at Boulder Creek. So to register or get more information, visit socialsecuritydinner.com. Also a reminder, given what you heard Mr. Mitch Shedlock talk about today and Mr. Peter Schiff, don't you think it's time you learn more about retirement planning in today's environment? We have a new retirement rules class scheduled again for January the 30th. It will be held at the East Beltline campus of Western Michigan University. You can register by visiting the website newretirementrules.com. There's also more information posted there. I'll tell you just a bit about the class and the time we have left. We give you a new perspective on retirement planning. We talk about economic cycles and money cycles, and show you how these cycles have existed in the past and show you why we believe that where we're headed is completely predictable. The class cost is just $49. That covers the cost of you and a guest. That's the books, all the handouts, and lunch for you and a guest. Again, the website to register or get more information is newretirementrules.com. Also, the Everything Financial radio program is repurposed each week into a podcast. That podcast is available by visiting the iTunes store, where you can become an Everything Financial radio subscriber and listen to the program whenever you'd like. So just go to the iTunes store and search under Everything Financial Radio. Also, all our programs and interviews with our guest experts are posted at everythingfinancialradio.com each week. So you can go there and listen or re-listen to an interview as well. Next week on the program, I'll have Mr. Jim Babka joining me. Jim is president of the organization Downsize DC, a very, very good organization in my opinion, and we'll be talking to Jim about some of the initiatives that Downsize DC has been working on. Always enjoy my conversations with Jim, so you won't want to miss that. We'll be talking to Jim on next week's program. That's all the time I have for this week. Hope you enjoyed the program and got something you can use. Talk to you again next week. Bye.